This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Fire on the Earth. Our Holy Father has said the Church is missionary by her very nature. The Church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the Church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. I hope you had a restful weekend. I'm just excited about this week's programs. I've got a good friend, Dr. Peter Williamson, is here with us to talk about the reliability of the Bible and the reliability of the witness of the Bible to the historic person of Jesus Christ and the apostles in his life. But today we're living in a time where this rise of new atheism and sort of loud new atheists in our time are attacking the credibility of the Word of God, the historicity of it. And I was recently at a debate with Dr. Williamson, not myself. I was watching Dr. Williamson debate another professor at the University of Michigan Dearborn campus. He did an outstanding job, and I asked him if he'd come in this week to just talk to us a little bit about what he's learned and what he has to say about this whole area. So welcome, Dr. Williamson.
Thank you, Pete. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And it was really quite a day there, that debate. It was a good turnout, and why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Sure. It was a great opportunity for me. I first declined when I was invited, but eventually I felt the Spirit prompted me to do it. Here's what happened. There are a couple of clubs on campus, the Ratio Christi, Reason for Christ, a Christian apologetics group, and then the Secular Student Alliance, and then the Philosophy Club wanted to sponsor a debate on the topic of, is Jesus a fiction? Mm-hmm. Because there was a professor, a philosophy professor, who said, you know, very good chance he never existed, and if he did exist, what we know from the New Testament isn't true. So I had the opportunity to prepare all that and then meet in debate, and it went very, very well. It was a very cordial communication, yet sharp differences of opinion. So it was quite good. If anybody wants to go see it, they can probably find it on YouTube by just searching my name, Peter Williamson, and Is Jesus Fiction? And I think if you do that, you'll find it.
Well, how did you go about answering the question? There's a kind of method that you took throughout the time. We'll kind of take it piece by piece this week, but what's the starting point?
Well, the starting point is, how do we know things in history? And history is different from knowing things in other fields like mathematics, where you can have mathematical proofs, or the physical sciences, where you can perform repeatable experiments. Well, we can't repeat history. So what we have to do is do our best to ascertain on the basis of the data that we have what took place. We look at the evidence, the witness, examine the witnesses, and try to sort it out. It's most similar to what we do in a court of law. You know, if there's a traffic accident or a crime, they'll gather the witnesses. The prosecution will offer an interpretation of the evidence. The defense will offer a different interpretation, or will try to discredit the arguments or witnesses of the prosecution. Well, history is more like that. So it's a matter of choosing the most probable explanation in light of the evidence that we have. Now, when we apply this to the past, of course, it's quite a different circumstance because we don't have any living witnesses from the first century. And in fact, there's not so much physical evidence. We don't have physical evidence that Jesus existed, just as we don't have physical evidence for 99.999% of the people who lived then. In fact, the very few people from...
What do you mean by that? Let me just stop you right there. What do you mean by that? Like, if you say we don't have any physical evidence, maybe some of our listeners will say, wait a minute, I've been to Jerusalem and you know... Or the church has parts of the original cross, or the church has the nails from the cross, or you know what I mean? Like things like that, that people would say, here's the physical evidence that Jesus lived at this particular time.
Right. Well, they may genuinely be the things that are claimed about them, but we don't actually have, you know, proof that links that piece of wood to Jesus of Nazareth. Mm-hmm. So when they speak about physical evidence for the existence of somebody, they're looking for like an inscription on a tomb. So for instance, we have that for Caiaphas, the high priest that put Jesus to death. They have found a tomb that seems to be the tomb of Caiaphas the high priest. But for Jesus and for 99.9% of the people that lived, we don't have that. In fact, it's interesting that we do not, apart from the Gospels, have more than one other writing from Palestine in the entire first century, and that was by the Jewish historian Josephus. And then we have the Gospels, some of which probably originated in Palestine. But those are the only writings that we exist of, and we only know of one other author during that period. So it's quite a different thing. So what do we look for? Well, when historians are trying to establish a fact about the past, they primarily look for documents, written documents that describe what was going on by somebody relatively close in time as possible to that event. Then what they look for is archaeological. First of all, you need to examine the documents. How reliable are the manuscripts? How much did those authors know? And then you need to say what other kind of corroborating evidence is there from archaeology or other historical information that we have. So that's basically the method. And what historians need, it doesn't produce certainty, mm-hmm. but it can produce a very high probability beyond reasonable doubt, mm-hmm. you know, in a court of law. Well, we look for a preponderance of evidence, which is not as high a standard as beyond a reasonable doubt, or perhaps we can get it very high. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of method that's used in examining the question of the truthfulness, the historicity of the gospel's account about Jesus.
So what do we have then in relationship to him?
Well, it's really quite remarkable because Jesus came from the remote eastern frontier of the Roman Empire among the Jewish people, not the sort of most important people from the point of view of the Romans. Mm-hmm. And yet, the amount of evidence for him is quite extraordinary. Let me just say something to you about the manuscripts, because I told you that documents are our primary means and mm-hmm. and actually our most significant historical sources for Jesus are the four Gospels, the other books of the New Testament also, and we have some other writings too. But the Gospels are primary. And our manuscript evidence for the Gospels is absolutely extraordinary. It surpasses that of any other ancient figure or writings. So, for instance, the other ancient writing of which we have the largest number of copies is Homer's Iliad. And we have about 700 copies of manuscripts from that. Those manuscripts are about 800 to 1700 years after Homer wrote or composed the Iliad.
So Homer composed the Iliad around 750 BC.
Right.
Before Christ, right? And so when you talk about a manuscript, Peter, what's a manuscript simply?
Okay. A manuscript is a writing on papyrus or on vellum, animal skins. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
That is their form of a book or a writing record.
So this book, Homer's Iliad, which everybody knows now and understands.
Yeah.
All where it came from, what we work from, is something that was written. There's 700 copies of it, but the earliest one we know of.
Well, we have fragments from the first century, but then the first full manuscript is in the 10th century, AD.
Yeah,
so that's 1750 years after Homer composed this work is when we have the first full manuscript of it.
And people just see that it's reliable. That we accept it, we teach on it, this is what he said, this is what he did. And we just accept it because this kind of rare amount of material for that period of history is normal, is typical.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, in contrast, there are other histories, Thucydides, Peloponnesian Wars, Tacitus, Annals. We have maybe 20 of those each, written maybe 500 to 1,000 years, or the copies we have are 500 to 1,000 years after Thucydides and Tacitus wrote. But in the case of the New Testament, we don't have 20 or 700. We have 5,700 manuscripts in Greek and 10,000 manuscripts, ancient manuscripts in Latin.
Yeah.
And the age of the distance in time between the earliest of these manuscripts and the writing of the New Testament documents is between 30 and 310 years. So we have a full New Testament 310 years after the writing of the last New Testament
document.
So
we have parts of manuscripts as early as 30 years from when they were written.
Right. Parts of the Gospel
parts
of John.
Okay.
We have that are within 30 years of the writing. And there is even evidence that not everybody agrees on of earlier documents still from the first century. So there's extraordinary manuscript
support. So it's not
support.
An exaggeration to say there just isn't anywhere in ancient history more manuscript evidence, both in terms of quantity and in terms of proximity to when it was written, than the New Testament.
Exactly. Jesus is the best attested historical figure from that period in time.
Yeah, that's really something, because I think most people don't understand that at all to be the case.
Yeah.
And so how could a professor at a university say, well, the evidence for someone who I'm sure accepts Caesar's Gallic War, the writing of Caesar's Gallic War or Homer's Iliad, he would probably fully accept that and wouldn't question the historical reality of the people who wrote them. But yet you've got, you know, 1,000 times more in the New Testament, yet somehow they say, well, there's no evidence for it.
Right.
And even hardly any evidence of the actual historical person of Jesus. Evidence for the resurrection or something miraculous, but just the fact that he lived.
Yeah? Well, that is an extreme position, the idea that Jesus is a legend and a myth. It's been around for 200 or 300 years. In every generation, some scholar comes up with it and sells a lot of books.
Yeah.
But the majority of scholars do not buy it. Even scholars that are atheists or agnostics, unbelievers, they do not buy the idea that Jesus never existed.
Okay.
So that's a very extreme perspective, and one that shows its head every few years, but it's not really taken seriously by historians of the first century of Judaism or of Greco-Roman history or of the Bible. People just say the historicity of Jesus is very, very solid.
Okay, so we have with all these manuscripts the confirmation of the historicity of Jesus. And then what other kind of assurance do you take from the sheer quantity of documents and their corroboration with one another that you have accurate recording of his teaching or what he said? Or what do you take from that then?
Well, the advantage of having manuscripts, multiple manuscripts, is you can compare the differences. These were all hand copied. So in fact, all of them are slightly different from one another, maybe just in one letter.
Mm-hmm.
But copyists make mistakes, or sometimes copyists find something that's a little awkward in the text and they kind of correct it a little bit, and then somebody else corrects it a little different way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole science called textual criticism, where what scholars will do is they'll compare the differences and try to ascertain which was the original text. Well, when you have so many manuscripts, and when you have them from so close to the writing of the event, and when you have them widely distributed geographically, you can have very great confidence that you are getting to very close to what the original text was, and that within the text we certainly have the original one, and the differences that we find are really quite minor.
Yeah. So you've got this amazing fact of the sheer quantity of confirming documents, and so we can have tremendous confidence that we're getting at what the original author intended to communicate.
Yes.
We're getting the Word of God. We're getting what he intended to write. So while this show went by really fast, we're going to take up tomorrow. Let's continue the conversation. We're going to talk about the intent of the gospel writers and the questions of bias and a whole range of things. But it was very helpful, Peter. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure being with you, Peter.
Friends, the Word of God is a great gift, and we can have tremendous confidence in its clarity, its authority. This is the Word of God for our salvation. I hope you can tune in tomorrow. God bless you.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message?, I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the Church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.